The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Tomas.
Ah, hi.
Wow. What a lot of effort.
Yeah. As, you know, I think the microphone didn't work on my other computer.
You
can hear me.
There's been so much chaos trying to get this call to work out. So for the listeners out there, this is with much strain and effort that we bring you Tomas from Bloodbound.
Yeah,
what is this, like the sixth time from like 4 days?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the first time I've run into so many problems with the connection. And, you know, we're able to speak to each other. I just don't know why it would never record.
Yeah, anyway. That's strange because it...
I don't know, because I had people in between that I was speaking to. And, you know, a couple of interviews I did. No problem. So I had no idea what at least we're here now.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get started. You listen to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight, in the premiere Third Eye broadcast of 2013, we present our Nordic Invasion with Bloodbound Laundry Horn on Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema, where the focus is on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. First up, we're speaking to Tomas Olsson of Swedish power metal standby's Bloodbound. With a difficult history involving numerous turnovers in vocalists, Tomas and Bloodbound have finally settled down with impressive frontman Patrick Johansson for Unholy Cross and their latest opus, In the Name of Metal. Harkening back to the classic melodic power metal template laid out by bands like Hammerfall and Helloween, this band's well worth checking out for fans of the style. Join us as we speak with Tomas Olsson, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea what we're talking about, here's Bloodbound with Bonebreaker.
We'll be right back. Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us another melodic power metal band out of Europe. Hailing from Sweden, the home of such luminaries of the style as Hammerfall and Dream Evil, they've released 5 albums to date with no less than 3 singers and on 3 separate labels. Here to speak about their second release for AFM, In the Name of Metal, please join me in welcoming Tomas Olsson, founding member and lead guitar from the band Bloodbound. Tomas, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show.
For so many times.
Yeah, it feels like we've done this forever now.
I know, it's like a cursed interview. Bloodbound has had a bit of a difficult history, even beyond our problem. You've gone through numerous changes and a few labels before settling into a solid lineup. This is even a bit convoluted to explain. You and your brother Henrik Olsson started the band back in 2004 with a fellow named Urban Breed on vocals. Now, I really thought that was a pseudonym, but I understand that's actually the guy's name.
Yeah, that's his given birth name. That's, you know, in Swedish, Urban Breed doesn't really mean anything. It's just a name. But obviously, you know, in English, the words mean something. But to us, that's just, a name.
Right. Anyway, the band releases Nosferatu on Metal Heaven Records. Then he leaves the band, and you take on Michael Borman for Book of the Dead. Then he leaves, and Urban comes back for Tabula Rasa, which came out on Blistering Records. And then Patrick Johansson comes into the picture, and the band gets signed to AFM for Unholy Cross and now In the Name of Metal. And that's not all, because during this time, the band cycled through 3 bass players, 2 drummers, another guitarist, and even a 4th singer who never appeared on an album. So how hard has it been to get a real footing and fan base with all these changes and personnel shifts?
Yeah, it's been difficult. And I think, you know, the main reason for all this turbulence in the band was, you know, when me and Fredrik formed the band back in 2004, it was just the two of us. And we started to write the songs for our first album, Nosferatu, and we didn't have a singer, so we contacted Urban, and he joined the band. And when Nosferatu was released in early 2006, we got all these offers for, you know, playing live shows and tours. But we didn't actually have a band. It was just the three of us.
Wow.
So we had to get a second guitar player and a bass player, and we didn't have enough time to put together a proper band. So we kind of started off in kind of the wrong way.
In flux. So you actually recorded, just you and Henrik recorded that entire album by yourselves.
Yeah, me and Fredrik. Henrik, he actually joined the band later on the Book of the Dead album. It was me and Fredrik who formed the band back in 2004.
But you guys covered all the instruments, and that's all just you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just the three of us.
That's actually interesting, because you don't hear of that outside of, like, you know, these black metal one-man bands or whatever. So considering how...
Yeah, it worked actually a bit like that.
Yeah, I mean, considering how polished the album sounds, knowing that, it's kind of a surprise. I will say that while Urban certainly had a good voice, I still prefer Patrick's. You know, there's a fuller tonality to it. Michael just seemed like an odd fit. He sounded like Henrik Ostergaard from Dirty Looks. And I don't think that sound meshed too well with what you guys are going for.
Yeah, that's what I think as well, because, you know, when we finished the Nosferatu album, Urban decided to leave the band, and we didn't have a lead singer. And, you know, we had all these songs written already for our second release, Book of the Dead. And the label wanted to release that album as soon as possible, and we didn't have a lead singer, so we were looking really hard for a good singer. And as you know, in this genre, it's difficult to find a good singer. They're
right.
Usually already in other bands. We had to look abroad, so we contacted Michael. He's from Germany, and he's a professional kind of session singer, but he's got his own band as well, and he's got his own studio and all that stuff. So he flew in from Germany and recorded the vocals on the Book of the Dead album.
Right.
I think he did a good performance on the album.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't really fit the sound of Bloodbound, I think. He's more of a hard rock singer.
Right. But if you had to fly him in just for the recording, how did you handle touring?
Yeah, that was ended up being a problem as well, because, you know, he's got his own studio and he does a lot of productions for other bands, and he's got a busy schedule. So we couldn't really do all the live shows that we wanted to do. And that eventually ended up that he left the band, and we asked Urban to stand in and do the live shows for the Book of the Dead album. And then Urban eventually got back into the band.
Then what happened after Tabula Rasa? Because he was out again.
Yeah, when he came back to the band, we thought we'd try to give it a second chance, because things didn't work out that well after the Nosferatu album when he left the first time, but we thought we should give it another try. But things really ended up being the same. We couldn't really work that well together properly, and, you know, he wanted to go in a different direction. And
right. I understand.
So it was problems again, so...
It's like trying to get back together with your ex. You know, you think you're going to change. No, they're not going to change.
Yeah, that was basically it. You know, we just got back to where we started, and with all problems again. So we decided to go separate ways after the Tabula Rasa album once again.
Right. And then where did you pick up Patrick? Was it after you signed the AFM?
No, that was actually back in 2006. He arranged this gig in his hometown, and he was just a Bloodbound fan back then. So we did that show, and we got to know him, and got another band, things in a band called Dawn of Silence. And I started to listen to some of their stuff back then and really liked his voice. And when we needed a singer, I remember he was a really cool, nice guy and a great singer. So I contacted him, and he was excited because he was a Bloodbound fan. So came up and to a rehearsal place and gave it a try, and turned out great.
Now, you guys have done a bit of genre blending with that devil mascot and your tendency to go around in corpse paint in the earlier days, but you've never really been black metal or anything along those lines. Bloodbound seems to be very firmly entrenched in the melodic power metal sound. So why adopt that image? Do you think it caused any confusion among the fans at all?
Yeah, it definitely caused a lot of confusion there in the beginning. And, you know, the corpse paint, that was really just something that happened at the photo session, because we wanted to do something a little bit different, and I just came up with this idea that we should, you know, wear corpse paint. And Fredrik thought, yeah, why not? You know, it's going to be funny and something different. And that's what ended up in the booklet of the album.
Right.
So it was just something we came up with at that time.
Who was it that came up with the idea? Because I think you had mentioned it was actually Urban's idea.
No, it was, you know, when we... After the album was released, we got all these live shows, and we were thinking maybe we shouldn't wear the corpse paint, you know, because it's a lot of effort to put it on, and, you know, to play with it, you get all the hair stuck in your face, and
right.
that crap. And but Urban said that no, now when we've had it on the album cover, we have to do it live as well. So he was actually the guy who was, you know, pushing us to wear it live. But he was very skeptic, you know, when we did the photo session in the first place. But I guess he got used to it and wanted to try it live.
But this must have really thrown the fans off.
Yeah, it's, you know, it kind of divided some people in the beginning there, because, you know, black metal fans and, you know, more hardcore metal fans, they thought it was, you know, not good, of course, because it's their territory. But a lot of the heavy metal fans and power metal fans thought it was fun with something different. So we got kind of a mixed reaction. But a lot of attention, I would say.
Let's talk about the AFM Patrick and Hansen era in specific. Unholy Crossing be a bit more grandiose and melodic than the earlier records. Not necessarily better, but more accomplished sounding, more anthemic and listener-friendly. It was still aggressive and it showed the chops, but it seemed to be leaning more towards the bombastic sound of Hammerfall than the more technical sound you had on Tabula Rasa.
Yeah, it's, you know, we wanted to, with Unholy Cross album, we wanted to go back to kind of where we started, like on the Nosferatu and Book of the Dead albums. And we wanted a more epic sound as well. You know, when Patrick joined the band, he had a new voice to work with, and I think it really fits that sound we had on the Holy Cross album.
Yeah, because it's a more powerful voice.
Yeah, it's more, I guess it's more diverse, and he's willing to try more different stuff as well.
In the name of metal, while it's definitely in the same ballpark as Unholy Cross, it seems to be a bit less grandiose, a dash less speedy. It's like you took the same basic template, but toned things down a little. So was this a deliberate move? You know, what were you shooting for with this album's sound to make it distinct from the last one?
Yeah, we wanted it to be more like an extension of the first half of Unholy Cross. We wanted to go back even more, you know, to classic traditional metal. So it's more of a, I guess it's more heavy metal than power metal in this album, but it is a mix. You know, you have some power metal tracks on there as well, some faster tracks.
I noticed you covered your own Book of the Dead again on this record. Did this just develop organically with you jamming the song with Patrick and deciding to record it, or was it more of a deliberate move?
Yeah, there was, you know, Book of the Dead is a song that we play live all the time, and with Patrick, of course, and we liked the way he sounded on that track, so we decided to put that track on the album because, you know, the fans have only heard that song with Michael on the
right.
Book of the Dead album. And as well, we weren't satisfied with the production on the Book of the Dead album. So it's a lot, the production is a lot better now on the two latest albums.
You don't seem to have any strong lyrical focus. You know, you keep things more simple with the sort of thing a lot of power metal acts tend to do. Songs about being true to metal, fantasy-based songs, and so forth. It's almost template, you know, the same kind of thing that bands like Helloween and Hammerfall have been doing for decades now. So do you see yourselves as more of that sort of easygoing and like a party band as opposed to, say, a band like Mob Rules where they're fairly politically focused, or somebody like Gravedigger who build these concept records around history and mythology?
Yeah, I would say we're more of an easygoing band when it comes to the lyrics. But we try to mix it. You know, we have some songs that are more, you know, more deep songs with more serious lyrics. We try to, like, blend it a little bit. Like, on the first Nosferatu album, that was a concept album where we were more focusing on the story of the album and worked a lot with the lyrics. So it's just, you know, some songs are more, you feel like you need a deeper kind of lyric or a story behind it, but some songs you feel like they should be more about the celebration of metal or just to get, you know, the sound right. It's difficult to explain, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, and in the end, this is all just music, and what really counts is a good sound, and you guys definitely have that end down, so it all works out in the end.
Yeah.
Do you have any tour plans coming up for the States?
No, I'm afraid we don't have any tour plans for the States. That's mainly because of the financial aspect, because it's expensive to go over there. And as well, you know, this last album, In the Name of Metal, is, you know, the first proper release in the U.S. as well. We have plans for a tour in Europe. We're going to play in Germany and a European tour at the end of March, and we have some festivals in Europe as well. But it would be great to go to the U.S. and play. And
yeah, definitely.
I hope we can do it in the near future.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or did you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, it's, I guess the best place to find information about Bloodbound is our website. It's bloodbound.se, and you can find links to Facebook and Twitter and MySpace and merchandise and all that stuff, and tour schedules on the website. So I guess that's the best place to have a look.
Well, with that, Tomas, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema after so much difficulty, and we'd love to have you back on your next album.
You finally got it named.
Exactly. We'd love to have you back on to talk your next album, hopefully with a lot less glitches.
Looking forward to it.
These problems
yeah,
were.
I really hope you got it on tape.
It's like we had a black cloud over this interview, but
yeah, I hope we can, you know, next time we can Skype. Work.
Exactly. Next time, hopefully, it'll be all cleared up, whatever that was.
Thanks for your patience as well.
I know, it's been a real, you know, I'm pulling my hair out. What's going on here? But it's okay. It all works out in the end.
Bye.
Bye.
And to close out our interview with Tomas is the title track off In the Name of Metal.
In the Name of
Illusion. Coming up next, Hoshi Road of Orchy Horn. I'm here on Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is James Murphy, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Stay classy, New York.
Toshi, hey.
Hey, man.
How's the weather over there?
Well, it's pretty cold as hell, actually. It's in Norway. It's always cold in wintertime, you know?
Yeah, because I think I heard that you guys are still buried under snow right now, huh?
No, there's parts of Norway buried under snow. Where I am, it's not that bad, really. There's a bit of snow, but it's, I think, weather is Seattle, in a way, normally.
Yep. Welcome back. I don't know what was going on there, but you were really breaking up, and there's a lot of echo, and it was like you were calling in from a cathedral.
No, I promise you, I'm not in a cathedral.
I didn't think so.
No.
All right, so I guess if you're ready, we can try to get started.
Yeah.
So, next up, we head over to Norway to speak with Torshov Toshi Rode of Orchy Horn. Founded by members of such infamous black metal acts as Gorgoroth, Godseed, and Enslaved, Orchy Horn taps into unexpected 70s rock and 80s AOR and corporate rock territory with a sound that brings to mind acts like Journey, Foreigner, Styx, and Aldo Nova. Follow the trail of the one-armed man to the Red Room and the man from another place for our interview with Toshi from Orchy Horn. But first, so you know what we're referring to, here's Orchy Horn with Redemption Blues.
Tonight we're talking metal, and we have with us a band with strong roots in the Norwegian black metal scene, but one who bears little evidence of this in their sound. With a strong 70s rock, 80s AR influence, and highly melodic approach to rock and roll with more than a little of that classic metal feel, please join me in welcoming Torsho Roe Toshi from the band Audrey Horn. Torsho, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Audrey Horn has been home to some rather prominent figures in the Norwegian black metal scene. You have Arve Isdal, Isdal from Enslaved and Godseed, Herbrand Larsen from Enslaved, and Tom Cato Visnes, King of Hell from Gorgoroth and Godseed. And yet, the band sounds nothing like any of that. There's really no black metal influence at all. So where does this come from? You know, did the guys view the band more as a side project from the more infamous gigs? Or despite the titling of your first record as We're Not a Band, have they come to see Audrey Horn as a full-fledged band on its own?
Yeah, well, I guess it started out as a sort of a side project, and those guys you mentioned, they grew up listening to bands like Deep Purple, Sun Evil, Thin Lizzy, Kiss, yeah, all of these bands. So basically what they wanted to do was just play that kind of music that was very close to their heart and that they grew up with. So they basically just formed that band, and then the drummer, Kjetil, we knew each other from, you know, way back. So he called me because I've never been in the black metal scene or anything at all.
Right.
I used to play in a band that was more like post-rock stuff. And so they called me and asked me if I wanted to try out with them because they needed a singer that that didn't have that metal. So they called me and asked me if I wanted to try out. And I was in a different band at that time, and I came down and I listened to their songs, and I realized, shit, they got some great tunes. So I tried out, and, well, they liked what I did, what I contributed to the band a lot. So we started playing, and it just evolved and got more and more. Within a certain period of time, we found ourselves as a pretty much a full-time band. And, well, we've been going out for 10 years now, so it's been a ride.
So you actually answered my first question, because I was going to ask how you got involved since you had no background in black metal. But so let's go on to the next one. You guys released the Confessions and Alcohol EP and No Eye Bond a decade ago, but the sound was a lot different. You know, you had this odd predilection towards grunge of all things. And I know that it's viewed differently in Europe, where metal never really died out in popularity. But here in the States, you know, grunge is pretty much anathema to the metal crowd. Nirvana and all that stuff is kind of what killed metal. It's only now beginning to make a comeback on a small cult level. So why grunge?
I don't know. I think, like I've said in a lot of the interviews, I think it's kind of like, you know, you start a band and it's kind of like building houses. You start out and you don't really know what kind of house am I building, how do I build it, and all of that. So you just start out and you write songs. And, of course, Herbrand and Tom Cato was in the band back then, and they came with their influences, which was more like into that Tool-ish post-grunge thing. So I guess when we started out, we just made music that we thought sounded good and that we wanted to play. And, you know, we changed a bit since then, but it's been 10 years. And over a period of 10 years, you know, you evolve and you change both as a musician and as a person.
As a person, right.
Yeah, so back then, we just made music that we thought sounded good, really.
Right.
Which we still do. We just make the music that we like and that we think sounds good.
So you also won a Norwegian Grammy Award for the album, and you were in fact nominated again for your second album. So how unexpected was that, given the backgrounds of at least three of your members at that point?
Well, it took us a bit by surprise because, you know, as I said, when we started out, it was basically just a side project, and we just made songs, and then we decided to record them, not to make an album, actually, but just to record them, just to put them on tape, really. And then some guys from, we did like three or four gigs, maybe, and then we got signed, we got a record deal offer, and we were like, okay, yeah, why not? And so it took us a bit by surprise because it was not in the sense that it was good music, and we knew that. We knew that we had strong songs and that we had a good sound and could deliver some good live shows. It was more surprising because we just did it for fun, and all of a sudden everyone was talking about it. Of course, the fact that they were from the black metal scene gave us a lot more publicity because people were really surprised that they could play this kind of music. But to us, it was like, what do you mean? They are in black metal bands, but that doesn't mean that they grew up listening to black metal and only
black
metal. You know? So,
exactly. Mm. So I believe Tom left when the Godspeed project finally got off the ground after his and Gall's somewhat acrimonious split from Infernus and the whole court case over the use of the Gorgoroth name. Did any of that drama bleed over into his time with Audrey Horne, or was that taking place more or less out of sight, out of mind?
No, that was... I think he had pretty much quit the band when all of that started happening. So, of course, he's still a good friend of us, and, you know, we hang out a lot. So, of course, we watched the whole thing from the inside, so to speak. But he had pretty much quit it by then. So I don't think that interfered with our music and our band at all.
Right.
But, of course, he talked a lot to us about it, and he was frustrated and all of that. So,
but what happened with Herbrand? You know, I wouldn't have thought there'd be a major conflict with Enslaved, since both he and Icedale take part in both bands, and both Audrey Horne and Enslaved did, in fact, tour together back in 2008 for La Fall.
Yeah. No, you mean why he quit? No, that was not. It was not a conflict at all. That was just basically that, and the fact that he runs a recording studio and he plays with that band, and he's got a private life also.
Right.
So it was basically just that he didn't have the time, and he had to give up something. And at that point, he had just started his recording studio, so he was very focused on building that up and doing that part as well. So it was basically just a time issue for him, nothing more with it.
And, you know, you never officially replaced either of them. You've been using a rotating lineup of live keyboard players and bassists ever since. So are you leaving these roles open in case they decide to return to the fold?
No, not at all. The bass player, he's been replaced. We have Jericho Espen, who plays bass with us.
Okay.
And he's been doing that for 3 years now. He basically, it started out on a previous album, on the self-titled one. We needed someone to play bass because Icedale was supposed to play the bass, but he's an amazing guitar player, but he's not a bass player really. So we figured that we need a proper bass player for this album, and we called Espen because he's a good friend of ours, and we always admired him as a brilliant bass player. So we called him and asked him if he wanted to just play bass on the album, and he was totally up for that. So he came into studio and laid down all the bass tracks. And then when we released the album, we were going on tour, and so we asked him if he wanted to, you know, help us out on a couple of gigs as well, and he said, "Yeah, sure, I can help you out." And we just paid him for each gig. We got a fee for each gig, but you know, after like 8 or 10 gigs, he just stopped billing us, and basically, he's just been with us ever since. So when we changed the record label now, we needed to sign the deal. So then we actually had to call him up and said, "I know it's been 3 years, but are you like a permanent member, or are you still helping us out?" And he was like, no, I'm up for this permanent. So he's been a full-time member. But the keyboard player, we haven't replaced. We use a keyboard player every now and then. We do a lot of gigs without keyboards as well.
So let's go back a step or two and ask a very basic question. Why Audrey Horne? Because obviously someone was a huge Twin Peaks fan.
It's a bit, we've all watched that Twin Peaks and are fans of that TV series, but basically what it was is pretty simple. I used to be in a band called Sylvia Wayne, which was a fictional woman's name. And when I joined the band and we started talking about a name for the band, some of the guys said that, they came to me and said that, you used to be in Sylvia Wayne. That was pretty cool to have a woman's name as a band name. So maybe we could do that as well. And I said, yeah, sure, we can do that. And we tried to come up with some names, but actually Herbron was, he was watching Twin Peaks around that time. And he came to a rehearsal and he said that, I think Audrey Horne would fit as a band name, because she's a bit dark and she's a bit mysterious. And back then, on our first album, it kind of suited the sound we had. So it wasn't so much that we were enormous fans and had an altar at home where we worshipped Twin Peaks, but it was more, it just, he was watching it at the time, and I'd seen it as well before, but after we decided on that name, I actually had to see the whole thing again. It had been a couple of years since I saw it, so that's basically why we ended up with that name.
I figure you're going to have like a cigarette-smoking man come out in one of your shows, a midget.
Yeah, actually we do, but he's backstage all the time. We have a red room in that backstage, smokes cigarettes.
But seriously, you've really shifted your sound and focus from the first few records, from grunge to more of a 70s rock sound, or maybe even an early 80s thing along the lines of Journey, Aldo Nova, or even Styx and Foreigner. It's got a lot of that kind of AR feel, but without some of the canned corporate rock feel that those comparisons imply. So who were your inspirations?
You know, it's been kind of an ongoing change in this direction from my first album to this one. It's, like I said, it's been 10 years, so you sort of change and you focus on how you want to write music and how you want to play music. And I think on this last album, we because normally Isdale and Thomas, the guitar player, they sit at home, you know, in front of their computer and come up with guitar parts and record it and add program drums and bass and keyboards and basically write the whole thing and arrange the whole thing. And then they give it to me.
Right.
And then I write the melody lines and all the harmony vocals and everything, and I record that. And then so you kind of compose music, I would call it.
Right.
We've been doing that for years. But we always felt that we needed somewhat more of a live sound or the live energy, basically, on our albums. So this time around, we decided to write everything as a five-piece together in our rehearsing studio. So basically, that's what we did. And when you stand there as a band and write songs together, it's a whole different thing than when someone sits at home and sort of composes on his own.
Right.
So by doing so, all the music that we came up with had more of that classic rock feeling. And our influences are basically what we grew up with. Bands
right.
like Thin Lizzy, Kiss, Iron Maiden, Van Halen, Rainbow, Deep Purple, all of that. So okay, on this album, when we started writing songs, we realized that, okay, we're turning very towards the more classic rock, which we probably started on our previous album as well, because there are some songs there that are more in that direction. But when we did that, at first we sort of paused and asked ourselves, can we do this? and then we were like, fucking, let's just make the music that comes natural, you know? And
right.
So I guess both the fact that we have changed over the years as a band and the fact that we changed our approach to writing and recording music was all part of what made the album sound the way it does, really.
Right. And, you know, just to throw a curveball onto that, I was wondering, do you think the fact that Tom left the band, being one of the major songwriters on the earliest material, facilitated this shift from grunge to this more 70s rock AOR sound?
Yeah, probably, because when he left, Thomas started writing a lot more, because he didn't write much back then. He contributed, but he didn't come up with many ideas back then. It was mainly Tom and Isdale who came up. But on this album, Isdale has written a lot, but I think we wrote it all together, but I think it was Thomas came with a lot of the ideas for these new songs. And our new bass player actually came up with a couple of the ideas for the songs as well. So I guess that also adds to the reason for a certain change in sound and songwriting.
And I'll tell you, it's a welcome one, because it is obvious there's been a big change, and I like it for what it's worth. So how do you feel that the move to Napalm has impacted the approach and sound on Youngblood by comparison with the earlier indie recordings and Dog Job releases?
I don't think it affected the music at all, because we don't really relate to them when it comes to music. We just make the albums. They don't have much saying on that part. What they have saying in is more the business side, how you present the band, how you promote it and everything. And on that part, it's been a change for the better, because even though we just had started promoting the album, I can definitely tell that there's a lot more efficient way of promoting the album on Napalm than on Indie.
Yeah, because I was just wondering if they threw more money at you so you could do better studio recordings, or, you know, there's things that can happen when you're with a bigger label that, you know, I was wondering if that impacted things.
Of course. But basically, this album, we spent a decent amount of money on recording this, but I don't think we didn't spend much less money on our previous album, so I don't think that had anything to do with it.
So the final question is, what do you prefer to play and be involved with? I mean, you personally obviously wouldn't be this one, but in terms of the other guys, do you think they prefer playing in the black metal bands or this more straight-ahead rock and roll that you're doing here? And do you think that you have or can build the same sort of following with Audrey Horne that they have with bands like Enslaved or Godseed? Or
I think as far as Isdale goes, he plays in Enslaved, but he doesn't write. I think he contributes with parts, but that's mainly the other guys in Enslaved. writers who write the music. But
right.
Andre Horn, he writes most of it. So I think this music is closer to his heart than Enslaved when it comes to passion. But when it comes to followings, I think, I don't know, you never know, but that whole scene has a lot more. They tend to worship their idols
right.
a bit more than in the scene that we are, you know, in our scene. We're more, it's more interactive approach to the audience. Within more extreme metal, you're more, there's people on the stage and then there's the audience.
Right.
You know, our shows are a lot more, you know, we are as much in the audience as we are on stage almost, so... So, I don't know. Maybe. Hopefully.
Do you have any tour plans coming up for the States?
No, we don't have anything planned. We're working on it. So, hopefully, next fall, not earlier than that anyways.
Right.
But we're working on that. So, hopefully, we'll get over there around that time.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or did you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, you know, please do go to our website. It's being reconstructed now because of the new album. So I think if you go into our website right now, then you will just get a link to where you can buy the album and to our Facebook page and everything. But it's, you know, if you go to AudreyHornMusic.com, you will get guided to where you need to go. So, and there you have updates on touring and on all other news.
Right.
That you need to figure out more about.
Well, with that, Toshi, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back to talk your next album.
Okay, cool, man. Thanks.
All right, so take care and hope to speak to you again.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
And to close out our interview with Toshi, here's another one from Audrey Horn. This is Straight Into Your Grave.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoy our interviews with Thomas Olson and Tricia Rhodes. We have a number of exciting guests in the world of music and film on top of the new year, so stay tuned to the WordPress site or the Facebook page for upcoming show info. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician like to join us on air, email us at third.fm@hotmail.com, visit our website, third.fm.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/third.fm. Third Eye Cinema, brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. This or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or our Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. In 2 weeks, Hope Stansberry talks Andy Milligan.